Yes, Mr. President, I think you can start. You can call the meeting to order.
Okay, thank you very much, Secretary General. I trust everything is in order now. It gives me a great pleasure to call today's sitting of the Governing Council to order. Before we get down to business, I wish to make the following 2 points. First, I said in my opening remarks of the Governing Council that we don't have the luxury to have serious technical problems which prevent our members' accessibility to Interprefy, the digital service provider of the Governing Council session. We are guaranteed to have a level best service, but our last sitting, many of our members experienced poor quality sound and poor quality videos, and intolerably disconnection from time to time. The worst case of disconnection for an hour and a half. Right after session, the Secretary General and I had a long video call. We discussed the technical problems on the Interprefy end. The Interprefy understood the severity of the problems and worked out solutions overnight with a technician dispatched to Geneva. Hopefully, same problems will not repeat today and the following days. Second, I'm grateful to Speaker Mudenda, who chaired the last segment of yesterday's meeting, as I was disconnected. I lost an opportunity to express my appreciation to our honorary president. Therefore, I submit herewith my following concluding remarks on the agenda item number 4 as a part of our official summary records. To save time, I will not read out the whole, but just highlight the following. Our honorary president always asks herself a question, I quote, how will history remember our generation, end of quote. Throughout her 3-year term of office, she herself answered the question, I quote, we can be the generation that achieves total gender equality. We can be the generation that opens the door to politics for young people. We can be the generation that redefines the human solidarity. We can be the generation that strengthens multilateralism. We can be the generation that puts the end to poverty. We can be the generation that eradicates hate speech. We can be the generations, the future generations, look back and say they made a difference, end of quote. Our honorable president has made a difference, and her leadership and her guidance, the IPU, made a difference. With that, we now take up agenda item number 6, under which the Governing Council will be informed of the financial results for 2019 and invited to prove the accounts. The Governing Council will also elect the internal auditors for the 2021 accounts. Now I would like to give the floor to the chairperson of the Subcommittee on Finance, Ms. Cecilia Whitgren, to report to you on this item. You have the floor, Ms. Whitgren, please. Cecilia, are you there? Secretary General, because I cannot hear Cecilia.
Yeah, the technician is in the room here with us. I think he's trying to sort that out. Yeah.
Secretary General, we solve the problem.
Okay.
From the beginning, Ed, or where?
Yes, from the beginning, please, Cecilia.
Yeah. Tell me when to start.
Yeah, sure.
Cecilia, we can hear you now. Please start. You have the floor.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, Mr. Secretary General, honorable members of the Governing Council. As the Chair of the Subcommittee on Finance, I'm pleased to report to you on the audit of the IPU's financial statements for year 2019. And I'm asking for the Governing Council's approval of the financial results of 2019. In April, the IPU external auditor from the Swiss Federal Audit Office, Mr. Monod, presented his findings from the external audit of the financial year of 2019. The financial statements of the IPU were followed by my predecessor, Dr. Ali Abdel Al from Egypt, and the internal auditor, Mr. Robert de Piccia from France, and of course, the Secretary General and his team. The external auditor's message was clear. The IPU financial statements were once again compliant with the International Public Sector Accounting Standards, IPSAS, and Mr. Monod was able to give an unqualified audit opinion. He was very pleased to report that the quality of the financial statements was high. Mr. Monod confirmed that the IPU was in sound financial health and that there were no new audit recommendations to be made. No problems had arisen during his work, and he reported an overall positive audit exercise, which had taken place under very good conditions. The Swiss Federal Audit Office had also agreed to carry out another and separate audit for the Swedish government agency SIDAS grant. And I'm now pleased to report back to the Governing Council that also that audit had been successfully completed. There was no audit recommendation, and the audit was now approved by the Swedish government's agency, SIDA, as clear and with accountability. This was the last time, after 7 years of work, that the Swiss Federal Audit Office would be auditing the IPU's accounts under this current mandate. We can therefore give a special note of gratitude to the external auditors from Switzerland for quality and added value of their work and the excellent support of the audit team to the IPU. Thank you very much. Both the Subcommittee on Finance and the Executive Committee were glad to learn of the positive results from the audit and to hear that the financial results showed that the IPU is in sound financial health. Both committees support the efforts of the Secretary General and his team to ensure good results with careful spending and are pleased to endorse the audit results and the financial statements. You will hear now in a few moments Mr. Delpechia from France in his role as internal auditor, who was also happy to accept the audit report and the financial statements, received clarification on a few points of some details from the auditor and from the Secretary General. The Finance Committee recommends, and the Executive Committee therefore recommends, the Governing Council's approval of the financial administration of the IPU and the financial results for year 2019. So, Mr. Chair, for the Governing Council's approval, please.
Thank you very much, Cecilia. And now I will give the floor to Mr. Robert Delpechia, the internal auditor for the 2019 accounts. You have the floor, sir. Are you there?
Mr. President, he's having difficulties connecting. Itu is somewhere where connection is very poor for him. But we do have a video message from him, and I suggest that the technicians launch that video message, please.
Okay, please.
Mes chers collègues, le mandat d'auditeur interne de compte pour 2019.
Colleagues, the mandate that you gave me in 2019 allowed me to execute the 2019 budget based on guidelines fixed by the subcommittee which I presided over when we were drafting the budget for 2019. I was able to make sure at the working group that I had on the 2nd of April as a virtual meeting with the Secretary General and his team, as well as with an external auditor of accounts, Mr. Didier Monod from the Swiss Federal Audit Office. From this meeting and the documents that we saw, I gathered the following results. The external auditor has indicated the quality of our financial accounts shows a faithful representation of the UIP's financial accounts at the end of the 2019 financial year. Generally, he has stated that the IPU has well managed its accounts and has healthy funding, so we can congratulate the Secretary General and his team for this. In terms of the budgetary plan, it can be stated that the 2019 budget is in conformity with the orientations that the Finance Subcommittee fixed. The contributions that were asked for in 2018 were the same as the commitments made. This was 11,450 Swiss francs. And this additional amount can be explained by the two additional members of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. In terms of expenditure, we had 3 million Swiss francs. This was a similar amount compared with 2018. The resort to these voluntary contributions means that we've been able to fund programs without having to resort to saved contributions. And this is thanks to generous donors. But we must remain vigilant. We do not want these to become too dependent, because that would threaten the independence of the IPU. Finally, the finance subcommittee spoke about 100,000 Swiss francs to balance the budget in case that would be needed. In the end, this was not required, and I'm very pleased with that. Thanks to a healthy and efficient savings policy that I would like to thank the Secretary General for. For all the above reasons that I do not have time to outline here, I recommend that we approve the financial statement for 2019. Thank you.
Merci, Monsieur. Thank you very much. My colleagues, as you have heard from our two, Cecilia Wittgren and also Monsieur, share their reports. And both the external, as I understand, the internal auditors have given the IPU a clean bill of financial health for 2019. This is good news indeed, and we can only encourage the Secretariat to continue to make the IPU accounts transparent and accessible, as well continue to ensure efficient management of its resources. The audited financial statements will be posted as usual on the IPU website once they are adopted, so they will be accessible freely to all. Are there any questions arising from the financial results for 2019? I see none, so I take it that the Council approved the financial statements. So approved. I take that the Governing Council can now approve the Secretary General's financial administration of the IPU for 2019. I see no green hands, which ask a request for floor. So approved. Thank you very much. And now I give the floor to the Secretary General to present the current financial situation. Mr. Secretary General, please, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. You and your colleagues have just approved the financial administration of the Secretary General for 2019. I want to thank you for your confidence, for your feedback on those accounts. And I just want to assure you that my colleagues and I will continue to do our level best to make sure that the accounts of the organization are properly managed. We have a strong interest and responsibility in ensuring that taxpayers' money is well spent and that it is the expenditure is consonant with the objectives of the organization. When I was elected as Secretary General, one of my pledges was to continue to ensure that the IPU's finances were on even keel. And so I am very pleased today to see that this is the case, and that the members are acknowledging that we are doing our best. I assure you that we'll continue to be transparent and make our accounts as accessible as possible to our membership. We owe it to you to make sure that this is happening. My colleagues of the finance team have been working with me to make sure that the accounts are well kept and that expenditure is consonant with the budget as decided by the membership. It now gives me pleasure to present to you the financial situation of the organization as we knew it in June this year. we have circulated to you a document that was dated 1 October, which has now been updated with data that has come in the past several days, especially in respect of the contributions by members to the core budget of the organization. The general conclusion from this document is that, again, there are no red flags to point out to. There's nothing out of the ordinary, even if we are dealing with extraordinary circumstances brought about by the pandemic. We are doing our best to keep the finances of the organization afloat, and our members are responding very positively to their responsibilities and obligations as members of the organization. We have not noted any specific difficulties being experienced by members in paying their assessed contributions for 2020. In fact, the levels of assessed contributions paid so far are consistent with similar data for previous years. So we are very grateful to our members for making that extra effort in spite of the very difficult times. This is testimony to the commitment that they demonstrate to the organization, and it is in our interest, my interest and that of my colleagues, to work towards living up to that trust. So if I may refer to the document that we have in front of you have the document in front of you, which is entitled Financial Questions, Financial Situation of the IPU at the 30th June 2020. You have a number of sections there. First of all, in terms of income, income is expressed including assessed contributions to the core budget, voluntary funding, and other accounts receivable. And according to the situation today, we see that, as I mentioned earlier, assessed contributions by members were fixed at 10.9 million Swiss francs, and this amount was fully invoiced to the members at the beginning of year. It is reflected in our accounts as revenue. I just want to point out that there have been no suspension of membership rights during this particular period. Then we have internal assessment of staff salaries. You know that staff of the IPU are subject to an internal system of taxation. The taxes that they pay are reflected as income for the members. And I am pleased to report that this particular line is on target at 95% of the budget. And when we go on to voluntary funding, on which I will provide more details later, we had budgeted 5 million in terms of voluntary funding. At the beginning of the year, we had an opening balance of 3.1 million Swiss francs. And during the year, we received more resources to the tune of 0.2 million. So we have a total of 3.3 million that we have been spending under voluntary funding in 2020. We do expect more resources to come in by the end of the year, and we are also pursuing contacts with a view to identifying new donors, as I will mention later. When it comes to the investment accounts, you know, we do receive some interests annually, and this will be recorded. The interests will be recorded at the close of the year. Overall, we do anticipate that investment and other revenues will be slightly below budgeted levels by the end of the year. You will understand that the crisis that we have faced this year has something to do with this, and we know that at the beginning of the year, the market, the investment market remained very volatile, although it has improved. When we go on to expenditure, Mr. President, members of the Governing Council, We have experienced some variations as a result of the cancellation of some of our activities, mainly the April Assembly, the April 2020 Assembly. And this led to significant reductions in travel, personnel, and meeting costs. But on the other side, we incurred expenditure in terms of remote working facilities and the organization of virtual meetings. So we can today estimate at the 30th of June that that particular budget line in terms of member relations, universal membership, that particular budget line is running at 63% of the budget for the first half of the year. Then when we look at visibility, the IPU's efforts to promote visibility for the organization, this is within budget by 11%, with additional expenditure planned for the coming quarter. The expenditure for improved management, governance, and internal oversight is at 80% of the mid-year budget due to reduced travel expenditure and no extra physical executive committee meetings during the year. Then I take you on, Mr. President, to our programmatic work and expenditure in this particular area, which covers the strategic objectives to strengthen democracy, achieve gender equality, human rights, youth empowerment, and development, as well as peace building. And here you'll remember that the this particular budget line accounts for 3.3% or 26% of the budget of the organization, of the total core budget of the organization. And currently, expenditure runs at 88% for the first half of the year. And we expect this budget expenditure to increase, but will remain below target by the end of the year due to savings on travel and meeting costs. When we look at program expenditure under voluntary funding, we have spent 1.3 million Swiss francs by the 30th of June 2020. This level of expenditure is actually low and is expected to be lower than planned by the end of the year, again, due to reduced travel and meeting costs, and the fact that some income and expenditure within multi-year funding arrangements are being deferred. When we go on to support services, administration, finance, financial management, and rest, that one is under within budget and accounts for 90% of the year-to-date budgeted level. And we do anticipate that by the end of the budget line will be on target. We move on to receipts, the other aspect of our budget, and there we have updated the document that was circulated to you on the 1st of October to reflect contributions from members. And you will see that as at 31st of October, the IPU had received payments of 9.6 million for the current year's assessed contributions, or 87% of the amount due. Again, I want to salute the efforts being made by our members to honor their contributions or their obligations to their organization. So we can report that outstanding balance, the outstanding balance on current year's assessed contributions is 1.4 million Swiss francs. We have received further payments of 0.2 million, as I explained earlier, against a prior year's assessed contribution. So we can point out that at the 31st of October, the outstanding balance for prior year's contributions was 0.9 million Swiss francs. and that amount includes a special debt owed by Comoros, the Comoro Islands, and Mauritania. When we have talked about the areas of contributions, and there we have the total amount of 2.3 million that is outstanding in terms of areas of contributions. And there we can say that three member parliaments, the Comoros, Dominican Republic, and Venezuela, were in arrears for three full years and therefore liable for suspension of their membership rights under Article 5.3 of the statutes. 10 members, Central African Republic, Congo, Cote d'Ivoire, Guinea-Bissau, Libya, Mali, St. Lucia, South Sudan, Sudan, and Vanuatu, and 3 associate members of the Union, the Indian Parliament, the Inter-Parliamentary Committee of the Economic Community of, the Inter-Parliamentary Committee of the West African Economic and Monetary Union, and the Parliament of ECOWAS, with 2 years, two full years in arrears, and so are liable to have their assembly delegate attendance restricted, and for the members to be deprived of voting rights under Article 5.2 of the statutes. There were 56 other members and associate members accounting for the balance of arrears, totaling 1.1 million Swiss francs. You'll find a table of unpaid contributions as at the 31st of October 2020 in Annex 2 of the document that you have before you. So the net position of allowance for uncollectible accounts was 321,000 Swiss francs. The budgeted allowance should be sufficient to cover any write-offs during this year. We also then have other accounts receivable, and under this heading, we normally report on reimbursable withholding taxes, technical assistance projects, and mission travel advances. And we have a total of 53,000 being reported there. You know that we have a safety net, which is the working capital fund of the organization, and the gross balance of that fund at the 31st of October was 9.3 million Swiss francs. Not bad indeed. Then we go on to cash flow. Here we have balances of cash and deposits of 13.8 million as at the 30th of June 2020. A total of 96% of cash and deposits were held in Swiss francs, 2% in US dollars, and 2% in euros. We also point out that the UN rates for Swiss francs currently stand at 0.91% US dollar and 1.078 per euro. Mr. President, when we look at capital expenditure during the first 6 months of the year, we did invest a lot on new computer equipment to the tune of 57,000 in response to the pandemic, to allow the Secretariat to work remotely under optimum conditions, and to allow us to manage virtual meetings such as the one that is taking place today. So when we look at investment expenditure in the development of the IPO website and our open data platform, we have a total of 39,300 Swiss francs spent during the first half of the year. Lastly, we report on the Legacy Staff Pension Fund. As you know, the IPU is a member of the UN Joint Staff Pension Fund, and our obligation to that fund consists of the annual contributions that the organization makes as an employer, together with our share of any actuarial deficiency payment. Then we also have a legacy pension fund, which covers former employees of the organization. That fund is also in good stead. At 30th of June 2020, we had assets of 3.8 million to cover our pension commitments to 10 former staff and the residual benefits for 4 current employees of the organization. The performance of the fund, you know, we do invest this fund in and on the investment market, and it was below target with a return on investment standing at 1%. Although, as I pointed out earlier, the markets are improving, and we hope that by the end of the year, the situation will have been improved considerably. I point out that the fund is being reviewed thoroughly at the end of the year, each year, and a full actuarial study of the fund will be carried out at the close of 2020 in conformity with IPSA standards, that is, International Public Sector Accounting Standards. Mr. President, I don't need to go into the annexes that you have there for your information, but if you allow me, I will briefly present the situation of voluntary funding, which, as has been mentioned by the chair of the Subcommittee on Finance and the internal auditor, is part and parcel of the budget of the organization. And they have made the point abundantly clear that while we continue to seek and mobilize additional voluntary funding, we have to monitor the situation closely so as not to reach a situation whereby we are unduly dependent on external sources for the resources that are required to run the organization. So on the basis of that, I just want to report that my colleagues and I, with the support of many members of the IPU, including the chair of the Subcommittee on Finance, we have been striving to expand our donor base as a means of increasing the voluntary funding that is available to the organization. And you will see that in the budget for 2021, we have maintained the same level of voluntary funding as is to be expected to cover part of the expenses of the organization. And I do think that that represents a quarter of the total budget for the organization. You have a document in front of you which explains various categories of sources for our voluntary funding. We have institutional funding arrangements, such as the one we have with the Swedish International Development Cooperation Agency, that is making multi-year funding available to the IPU. Currently, that is 1.5 million Swiss francs a year that is used to support the IPU across its strategic objectives. We do have the Shura Council of Qatar, with whom we are in negotiations, and they have indicated that they will provide funding also to cover the gamut of strategic objectives of the organization. When it comes to program funding, we do have a series of development agencies that are providing funding. We have Irish Aid that is supporting our gender equality program. We are in negotiations with the Canadian agency or Canadian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade with a view to renewing funding for our gender work. And I want to salute the efforts made by one of your colleagues on the executive committee, Mr. President, Honorable David McGuinty, to nudge the Canadian authorities to be more forthcoming in their response to our request for additional funding. This is an example of the type of involvement that we would like to receive from our members. We're also pursuing our discussions with the United Arab Emirates with a view to supporting our gender equality work. We continue our cooperation with the Partnership for Maternal, Newborn and Child Health to promote work in this particular area. And we expect to renew our funding arrangements with them once they have finalized their current strategy. You remember that a couple of years ago, we did sign a cooperation agreement with the World Health Organization. And under this agreement, we have agreed a work plan with resources being made available by the World Health Organization for us to implement jointly agreed activities. We are continuing to use funding from Angola to support our work in the area of maternal, newborn, and child health to the tune of 200,000 Swiss francs, funds that were made available as far back as 2016. Thank you, Angola. And China, Mr. President, China has been a steadfast supporter of the organization, and you and your colleagues of the executive committee were informed recently that China had pledged new funding to the organization to the tune of $1.5 million to cover IPU activities to build capacity for parliaments under the Sustainable Development Goals. Thank you very much to the National People's Congress of the People's Republic of China for this renewed commitment to the organization. We are indeed very grateful. We have Equatorial Guinea also that has pledged 400,000, and we are still in negotiations with them to actually pay up. Another country which whom we would like to salute at this stage is a small country in terms of size, Micronesia, but in terms of influence, is very important. They have been steadfast in their contribution to the organization. In the past, they have made available $100,000 that we are using to support our migration and refugee work. Now they have come forth with a new pledge of 130,000 Swiss francs to help take our work forward in the wake of the 130th anniversary of the organization. Thank you very much, Micronesia, for that support. Then we have our ongoing work in Djibouti that is being supported by the European Union to strengthen capacity in the area of human rights to the tune of 260,000 euros. Again, the United Arab Emirates is considering support to our peace and security program, and we are following up on that lead very robustly. Now, coming to another category of support that we receive, this is within the United Nations system. And there we have, first of all, the United Nations Development Program, a long-standing partner with whom we do capacity building for parliaments. And we currently have an arrangement with them for Myanmar that has been ongoing for several years now. We also now have an agreement with the United Nations Office for Disarmament Affairs to allow us to do work to promote the implementation of Resolution 1540, which, as you know, is a resolution that is intended to prevent access to weapons of mass destruction by non-state actors. We are pursuing and concluding our current agreement with the UN Women in support of gender equality programs in Turkey. You remember that last year I had the pleasure of signing with my colleagues of the UN Office on Drug and Crime and the UN Office on counterterrorism, a five-year program to support our work, combat terrorism and violent extremism. And as part of their contribution to that agreement, the UN Office on Counterterrorism has made available a total of $2.2 million that is going into our work to promote parliamentary action to combat extremism and terrorism. Under this, I have reported in the past that, again, China is making available $1 million. Bangladesh is making available $200,000. Benin is making available 15,000 euros. And we are encouraging other countries. I mentioned earlier that the United Arab Emirates is pledging to support work in this area. Lastly, I want to refer to other partnerships. And there, as I mentioned earlier, we are striving to broaden our partnerships with other donors in order to work to help us implement the ambitions of the organization. We're also receiving some support in kind. And I'm always pleased to report that the National Assembly of the Republic of Korea is continuing its program of secondment of staff to the IPU to boost our research capacity. We are very grateful for this ongoing commitment. We are continuing to implement our agreement with the Graduate Institute for International and Development Affairs of Geneva, under which we are having access to policy-oriented research. We have access to human resources, whereby students, outstanding students of the institute are seconded to the IPU to help our work. And so we are very grateful to them for this. And in recent years, Mr. President, as I reported to the Executive Committee, the Secretary General has reached out to a number of foundations to support our work. This is the case of the Blue Planet Foundation, which I believe you know very well because its founder has come to the IPU on several occasions and has been working with us on climate change activities. We also have Julianne Wrigley Foundation that is now supporting our work in gender equality. And I'm hopeful that they will expand to other aspects of the IPU's endeavors. Mr. President, distinguished members of the Governing Council, I have been very lengthy, but this is in the interest of transparency. I want to put on the table all the data that is available to us so you know where your resources are coming from, where these resources are being spent, in the interest of transparency and accountability. Thank you very much. My colleagues, Andre and Ed, are with me here in the studio, and they will help me answer any questions that members may wish to raise with regard to the financial situation of the organization. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Secretary General, for a very comprehensive report. It's informative as well as very much encouraging. And I must commend you, Secretary General, that you're making great efforts on the management, financial management of the IPU. And also, I commend you, you make great efforts on the volunteer funding, that front. As you said, you expand the basis and also increase donors, and this is a praise and continue to do so because IPU is more needed on many fronts and areas, particularly like realized SDGs, counterterrorism, capacity buildings. So these areas are very, very important. So now floor is open for any questions and comments our Governing Council members might have. Please. In the meantime, I noticed, Secretary General, from event chat, there is a question submitted by Thailand. I know that you covered this issue in your report, but still I want to direct this question to you. Our representative from Thailand asking, do we have to be concerned about the very high unpaid contributions of 1.37 million Swiss francs as of 31st October 2020? Secretary General, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, of course, we always have to be concerned about unpaid contributions. We expect all members to pay up. But due to a variety of reasons, some members are not in a position to pay up. But as I said in my introductory remarks, there is no cause for alarm at this stage. The level of paid contributions for 2020 is comparable with similar periods in previous years. And so we do not have cause to be alarmed at this particular stage. But I would like to ask our members to help us encourage parliaments to pay up. I do know that some of them have to, they do program to pay later in the year. They don't always pay at the beginning of the year. So we hopefully the situation will improve as the year concludes. I hope so. But I am also appealing to the members of the chairs of the geopolitical groups to reach out to their members who are in areas of contribution to pay. Otherwise, we will find ourselves going into the cycle of writing off debts that have not been able, that cannot be recovered. I don't want to get to that level. But the short answer is no, for the time being, we don't need to be alarmed. But if we let the situation continue unabated, then we'll get to a point where we will be raising that alarm, and we hope that we'll not get to that stage. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Secretary General, for your answer. Any other questions and comments? I see none. Oh, yes. I see China. Professor Chai from China. The floor is yours, please.
Dear colleague, the sudden outbreak of the COVID-19 has dealt an unprecedented blow to global economic and social development. Most member legislatures still paid their contributions on time, which spoke volume of the how they highly value and support the IPO. As a response country and the largest country contribute to IPO, China has always strictly fulfilled its due international obligations and paid for amount of the contributions on time. Besides, China has provided the donation worth $2.5 million to the IPO. Capacity building programs for developing countries and the IPO counter-terrorism program. In the virtual session of the 5th World Conference of the Speakers of the Parliament, His Excellency Li Zhanshu, Chairman of the Standing Committee of National People's Congress of China, announced that China would again donate $1.5 million to the IPU for its work on promoting sustainable development. As a saying going in China, that a good steel should be used for the sword's cutting edge. We hope that the IPU could make careful and wise use of its hard-earned financial resources and make more efforts in areas that the international community concerns and the maximum countries benefit from. At present, countries hope the IPU to play a more active role in safeguarding multilateralism, deepen cooperation on campaign of the 19. Restoring world economy and advancing global governance. We hope the IPU could intensify its investments on its fields and ensure the financial resources to achieve tangible results. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Tsai, for your comments. I also noticed from an event chat there is a question from Bahrain. To Secretary General, do we expect to save on the administration cost by using technology? Will be reducing the number of travels and a face-to-face meetings? Secretary General, please.
Yeah, thank you. I think the answer is very obvious in my... Thank you, Honorable Fakru. Thank you very much for your question. The answer is obvious. This year, we have made a lot of savings without actually cutting back on our activities. And we have done this through the use of technology, going virtual and working remotely. And so there is a positive experience to rely on. And I believe that when you will have the presentation on the budget, you will see how we plan to carry out activities in 2021, learning from the lessons that have been learned this year. We have also, when you will look at the list of meetings, you will see that we've made provision for many of the meetings to go virtual. This is on account of the cost-benefit analysis that we are doing, and we are very keen not to go back to business as usual and to factor in the lessons learned during these COVID times and make our organizations more cost efficient. I can tell you, for instance, that our concern, by virtue of the fact that we're not meeting in an assembly or a governing council meeting like the one we're having, we're not meeting physically, we are saving more on paper consumption. We're not using any paper at all. So this helps our paper smart policy. But also, I would point out that by going virtual, by using new technologies, we are helping to cut back on our carbon footprint, which is very good for the environment. And I am very glad that we can do this. And my colleagues and I will make sure that we continue to give pride of place to new technologies wherever feasible to implement the activities of the organization.
Thank you very much. And any other questions? I see no green hands and also no more questions from event chat. I thank you, representative member from Thailand, from Bahrain, for your questions. And also thank Professor Chai from China for your comments. I thank Secretary General for your very pointed answers. And our representative from Thailand appreciate your answers. My colleagues, under this item, we need to appoint the internal auditor for next year's accounts. We have received the candidature of Madame Molongwe Molel of Gabon for this position. I take it the Governing Council wishes to appoint her. I see no objections. So decided. Thank you very much. I would also like to notify the Governing Council that the Executive Committee has selected the Indian Supreme Audit Institution to be the external auditor of the IPU accounts for 2020 to 2022. Now we conclude the deliberations of item 6. Now let's move to item 7.
Yeah, Mr. President, before you move on, we have been told that the number of delegations that they are trying to raise their green hands. We see South Africa and to some extent Nicaragua. Yeah, they indicate that they have put a question on the private chat to the Secretary General, but I haven't seen that question. You may wish to ask Nicaragua to state that question in the interest of transparency, and South Africa too, if we're able to connect.
Okay, I apologize for that because I haven't seen any green hands on my screen.
I haven't seen any either, but okay. We have been told by the technicians
okay.
that...
I would give floor to the representative member from South Africa to be followed by Nicaragua. We have connected. Secretary General, can we connect them? Okay, South Africa, come in. Floor is yours, please.
Apparently, South Africa is on the line, but they are muted. Can they unmute themselves? They can write the question on the chat, the event chat, if they want, and we will be pleased to answer the questions.
Okay, Secretary General, because Nicaragua, I said they wrote put a question to your private chat.
Yeah. Yeah, they should put it on the event chat.
On the event chat, yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Event okay, chat. Here we go. From Nicaragua, what will be the strategy that IPU will apply to recover the amounts owed by some of the countries?
Thank you. May I, Mr. President?
Please, Secretary General.
Yes, thank you very much. My colleagues and I do reach out to those countries on a regular basis to remind them of their obligations towards the organization. We engage on a one-to-one discussion with them, and many of them do explain to us the circumstances under which they are unable to pay. And we do understand, for instance, Libya has a problem with transfer of funds from Libya to the IPU. And there we have agreed with them that whenever it is possible, they can pay the money physically in Geneva to us. The Democratic People's Republic of Korea has the same issue, and so we come to those arrangements with them. But again, we do reach out, we do write letters to the individual countries pointing out how much they owe, the penalties for which they are liable, and we do express to them that we would not like to get into a stage where we would have to suspend their membership rights. And so, again, we are carrying out ongoing efforts in this regard, Mr. President, but we would like the coordinators of the geopolitical groups to help us in nudging their members to pay up their dues to the organization. Thank you. I see, I did see Uruguay raising their green hand. Is that?
Secretary General, we
they put it down.
South Africa.
Yeah, you see, Mr. President, my colleague just pointed out to me that as a result of our efforts, Mauritania is back in the IPU, well, has recovered its membership rights after paying part of their contributions, areas of contributions. I had to go and see the ambassador of Mauritania personally in Geneva to encourage him to get the authorities to pay up. And we are happy to say that they're able to recover their part of their membership, or they're recovering their membership rights. And we did last year send a delegation to Honduras to discuss with the authorities in Honduras what it is that is preventing them from paying. They are owing, right, Ed?
They were also withdrawn.
Yeah, their membership rights have been suspended, but we did reach out to them, including sending a mission to Honduras. But now those efforts have not borne fruit. We do not relent. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Secretary General, for your answer. Here's a comment from Levent Chat from Egypt. I read it. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the Secretary General for doing all possible to reduce the costs and maximize the benefits of using IT. We appreciate this comment, member from Egypt. Appreciate it very much. Any other comments and questions? We cannot get the South African right. Okay, we see. South Africa. Okay, Andy Modias.
Speaker Modise, you're online.
I will pass.
Okay, she says that she will pass. Okay, thank you very much, Tandy.
Okay, appreciate, Madam Speaker. So well, let's move to item 7. Under the item 7, the Governing Council will be invited to adopt the IP draft budget and a work program for 2021. The draft budget and a work program for 2021 has been circulated to all Governing Council members well in advance. I give the floor now to the chairperson once again of the Subcommittee on Finance, Ms. Wilgren, to present the IP draft consolidated budget for 2021 on behalf of the Executive Committee. Mr. Wilgram, the floor is yours. Floor is yours, please.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Secretary General, fellow members of Parliament, ladies and gentlemen. The new member of the Subcommittee on Finance in the IPU were elected in June this year. So this will be my first opportunity to address you as its chair for the Governing Council and for the chair of the Finance Committee. Thanks for the trust to lead this important task during the years to follow. You have received next year's 2021 year's consolidated budget draft from the Secretariat a few weeks ago, and I hope you have had a chance to review it. The Subcommittee on Finance has been closely engaged through the entire process of developing next year's draft budget, advising the Secretary General and providing guidance and oversight. Members of the Finance Committee are from every geopolitical group within the IPU and are asked to discuss and anchor the financial items within the geopolitical groups. And thank you for those of you who have been in contact during the process. Thanks for good input and discussions. And please, everyone, if you have an interest in financial items, feel free to contact me anytime during a budget year. The Finance Committee have been holding remote meetings throughout the past few months to lead the preparation of the budget, to review and to edit the full draft document which you now have before you. Thanks to all members in the Finance Committee, you have been so committed. Actually, it's historical. Nearly all geographical group members from the different groups have been present on all the meetings. It has never been so high in the Finance Committee before, and I'm very pleased. Thank you very much for your commitment. So the Finance Committee have provided scrutiny and quality control to support the Executive Committee ahead of its recommendation to adoption for you by the Governing Council. It's a unanimous Finance Committee and a unanimous Executive Committee that now is presenting the budget draft of 2021. And as everyone in every budget process this year, it's the year of the pandemic, and it is, as the Secretary General of United Nations said, it is our 1945 moment. And of course, that will be reflected even in this budget. But as we have learned historically from other crises, we are here to take responsibilities as members of Parliament, and we are here to take actions. So, ladies and gentlemen, in these unpredictable times of exceptional challenges, we have had approached the preparation of next year's budget with a very clear message. Now and the coming years, the world will need even more multilateralism, more parliamentary diplomacy, and that is what members of Parliament and the IPU offers. We want to encourage members of Parliament to step up their engagement for multilateralism, democracy, and human rights in an efficient, modern, and flexible manner. The IPU is the International Organization for Parliamentarism, and it's built on active and strong members. This budget is the tool to realize our ambitions and promote a robust parliamentary response to crises such as the ones we now are facing. But as we have learned through history, this is only a dress rehearsal for challenges to come. That's why we should step up our engagement and offer a robust parliamentary response to crisis, as parliamentary diplomacy could be a part of a larger solution. I want to report to you that we have listened to you members during the budget preparation. The total assessed contributions will remain at the current level, at the same current level, even next year. And there will be no increases in contributions for any member. At the same time, the IPU and its services have never been more needed. That is why we have to step up to prioritize and be even more efficient and clear on what we are for, our core values. Let me recap on the history of members' contributions. For many years, up until 2011, contributions grow at an average of 3% every year. From 2012, the IPU implemented a series of substantial cuts. Total contributions were reduced by over 2 million every year, back to the contribution level of the 1990s, before stabilizing again. In next year, the total amount of contribution will still remain well below the level that it was in year 2007. Yes, year 2007. At the same time, the IPU membership grew from 150 to 179 parliaments, which of course is helpful to gradually relieve the burden on existing members. Turning now to the key elements of next year's budget. We are under no illusion that these are very challenging times for members in many ways, and therefore also financially. So I repeat once again, there is no increase in contribution for any member next year. Next year's voluntary funding is expected to be at a similar level as this year, with some new grants anticipated, just as the Secretary General just explained for us. We also encourage every member and, of course, the Secretariat to continue to mobilize on funds from parliaments, from governments. And therefore, we also put out a guideline with good examples and good practices that one can use. And I encourage you all to pursue any opportunity for fundraising back home in your parliament. And if you want any help or advice, please contact us. This budget stresses the importance of flexibility and new working modalities in response to the COVID-19 crisis. We don't know how events will unfold next year, and we need to be ready and responsive for different scenarios. In particular, the budget places more focus on effective use of communication, new technologies, and on remote working. And we are making history today, having the Governing Council digital. But that is just a start. The IPU have practiced now for over half a year, with members of parliaments engaged globally. And you are today making history with this, and that is just a start. The IPU needs more visibility, more parliamentary diplomacy, and the only ones that can make that happen are us. So emphasizes on more virtual meetings, virtual regional seminars, hybrid meetings, and inclusive meetings. We are engaged as members of parliament. We adopt, we engage, we act on how the world actually looks like. We are driving digital democracy, and it's both inclusive and efficient. So congratulate yourself for being involved in this part of history. This has been the year of postponements because of fewer physical meetings being held and less travel taking place. Any postponements and savings made will go into the IPU's working capital fund reserves, as usual. This fund is a very important component of the IPU's financial health and resilience, and it allows the organization to react to lean times such as this. In fact, the target for the level of reserves was decided already in 2006. Yes, in 2006, and which is set at a level of half of the operating budget. And that level have never yet been reached, not even this year, as we estimated right now. We will get closer to the target, certainly, but that would only leave us an even more resilient organization for the future. Next year is the final year for implementing the strategic objectives for that the Governing Council has adopted. It is necessary to accelerate its implementation. The Working Capital Fund is necessary, and members' contribution will be used by setting strategic goals finalized. On the same time, it is also a year of a new start. With a newly elected president, a new executive committee, it is a new start in new times for the IPU. It is also the year in which a new IPU strategy will be designed and adopted for year 2022 and beyond. And we have made financial provision for that important work. I hope this will lead to an even greater focus on the IPU core values and support for the IPU's long-term commitments to environmental impact, gender mainstreaming, human rights-based approaches, democracy, and freedom. You will see within the framework of the budget how these priorities are presented, both in the summary and in the detailed explanations of each objective. The total income and expenditure for next year is budgeted at nearly 18 million Swiss francs. One fourth of the income is from voluntary funding resources. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to conclude by saying that the IPU is committed to exercising the highest standards of transparency and accountability, as well as undertaking audits. The IPU is improving its result-based management tools for tracking progress in the implementation of the strategic objectives. The approval of this budget will enable the organization to drive forward the values and ideals of the IPU while also becoming an international leader in driving digital democracy globally. The Finance Committee has recommended, the Executive Committee unanimously endorsed the draft consolidated budget for year 2021. And I therefore recommend the budget to the Governing Council for approval. Thank you for the possibility and best wishes to you all. Stay safe.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wickren. Good presentation, wonderful job be done. I commend your effort and also the subcommittee on finance to work out this consolidated budget. And presentation is well taken and is very informative, very encouraging. At this point, I would like to give the floor to the Secretary General to compliment the presentation of the draft budget. Secretary General, floor is yours, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I just want to thank the chair of the Subcommittee on Finance and representative of the Executive Committee for her presentation of this budget. I don't have much to add, because in our view, this is a budget that is and should be owned by the membership of the organization. It should be viewed as reflecting the requirements and the commitments and objectives of the IPU as reflected by the members. And so we have, under the leadership of the subcommittee, put on paper what we do understand as the desires of the membership that are consistent with the strategy that the organization has given itself. So we do hope that if we do implement the budget as we expect to do, we will have helped the organization move closer to the achievement of its noble mission. The budget, as the chair of the subcommittee, Cecilia Wedegreen, has just said, is a budget that reflects the effects of the crisis that we are currently facing. It's a budget that is intended to accommodate the impact of the crisis and help parliaments respond effectively to the crisis. And as we can say, it is a budget that will promote digital democracy, digital parliamentary diplomacy, because the bulk of our work in 2021 will be conducted via new technological platforms in order to achieve cost effectiveness, in order to scale up our activities as a result of the savings that will be made by adopting new technologies. I would like to highlight the continuing priority that the organization will give to issues of gender equality, human rights, climate change. And you will see in the budget that these three issues are being mainstreamed in the budget throughout. And for instance, you will see that for every area of work, we have sought to identify the climate change impact. We have sought to identify the gender equality issues that need to be addressed in each of the programmatic and strategic areas of work. So we hope that we can help the organization move further. As Ms. Wedegreen has said, next year is the final year of the current strategy of the organization, and we are thinking already of reviewing that strategy and helping the membership come up with a new strategy that factors in developments that have occurred since 2017 when the strategy kicked in. We are sure that the president who will be elected at this session of the Governing Council will be anxious also to reflect some of the concerns that they would like to see in the strategy. I also want to point out that transparency is going to be a priority in the budget as we move towards the implementation of the study that was conducted this year on how to make the organization more transparent in its operations, as well as help parliaments promote transparency in their operations back home. So this is something that is clearly identified in the budget. We are also laying emphasis on communications. We have learned lessons in the implementation of the current communication strategy of the organization, and we have seen the positive impact of the novel activities that have been conducted by the communications team. This will be pursued and reinforced in 2021, and it will be buttressed by the findings of the study that we have carried out on our relationship with the United Nations, where our external consultants have stressed the need for us to devise a specific communication strategy in our relations with the United Nations. So all of this has been built into the program budget for next year, which is before you. And I would like to join Cecilia in urging the membership to give us the green light so that we can implement this budget with the resources that are available in a responsible manner, as I pointed out before, in a transparent and accountable manner, with a view to helping you achieve your noble objectives. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Secretary General. The floor is open for questions and comments. I see none, no green hands, and no questions in the event chat. May I take it? We agree to approve the budget as recommended by the Executive Committee. So approved. My colleagues, the consolidated budget of our organization for 2021 is hereby approved. Here I just want to point out that the IPU financial situation is healthy, and we have just approved the consolidated budget for 2021. It is a strong budget. As our Secretary General said at the Executive Committee, he said that the other international organization is envy of our budget. It's a strong budget, which comes in at very difficult times. It is not easy come at all, hard one indeed. Thanks to the contributions made by all members of IPU and also external donors, we should remember the IPU work needs to focus on the people-centered philosophy with a cost-effective and a results-oriented approach, as well as the measures, recommendations listed by Ms. Wickman, Chairperson of Subcommittee on Finance, when she presented the budget to the Governing Council. I think we should put these measures in place. Implement these measures. We also, as Secretary General said on many occasions, the Secretariat needs focus on the savings and also try hard to cut the cost, as our representative from Egypt mentioned, by using IT, creativity to cut cost. So to make sure whatever we're doing, the IPU, is to deliver tangible results to the people we are representing. This brings us to the conclusion of the deliberations on the item 7. We now move on to item 8. Under this item, the Governing Council is invited to elect two new members to the Executive Committee in order to replace Mr. Kieran Lennon of Switzerland, who is no longer the Member of Parliament, and Mrs. Ferrara Gomez of Cuba, whose term comes to an end at this current session of the Governing Council. IPU has received the candidatures of Ms. Lawrence Fellman Riel of Switzerland to complete the term of her predecessor until October 2021, and of Ms. Beatrice Agyeman, Speaker of the Senate of Uruguay, for a full mandate running from 2020 to 2024, representing the group of Latin America and the Caribbean. These candidatures with accompanying letters and CVs were shared with the full membership of IPU Governing Council on 16th September. As we have two candidates for two vacant seats, I take it that Governing Council wishes to prove the nomination and the election of Ms. Feldman and of Ms. Ajman as members of the IPU Executive Committee. I see no objection. So decided. Thank you very much. Let me offer my congratulations to the two colleagues of the Executive Committee. They do have impressive and outstanding experiences and have engaged actively with the work of IPU. I'm confident that they will make valuable contributions to the Executive Committee and to our organization as a whole. Because this is a virtual session, we don't know them. We cannot see them. If you agree, certainly if our newly elected members of the Executive Committee would like to, I wish to invite them to make a few remarks. Is that agreeable? I see no objection. So agreed. Now I first give floor to Ms. Feldman, to be followed by Ms. Ajman. Ms. Feldman, the floor is yours. Ms. Feldman, are you there? If not, and I wish to give floor to Ms. Ajman from Uruguay. The floor is yours, Madam Speaker.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm very excited for me and for Uruguay. It's a great honor to be part of this governing council. We are committed to the work we are taking on. We are proud and we find it an honor. Thank you for your welcome. We want to do as much work as we can, of course.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. Now I give floor to Ms. Feldman. Floor is yours, ma'am. Because I noticed that in the event chat, Ms. Feldman said that we raise our hand, but I still cannot see the green hand. Are you there, Ms. Feldman?
Yes, if Ms. Feldman, we've been told that maybe she needs to refresh her line, restart all the, there's a button that says restart all lines, located in the upper menu on the platform. Can she do that?
Okay, now I see the green hand. Mr. Feldman, you have the floor, please.
Okay.
Merci.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary General, colleagues in the IPU. Thank you so much for the trust you have placed in me in this election to the Executive Committee. I am greatly honored, as the Vice President said. I'm taking over from Margaret Kinnear-Allen, who left Parliament and who was previously on this committee. So I'm very enthusiastic to continue with that mandate and to complete the Swiss mandate from now until the end of 2021. I've had the pleasure of working online in various sessions of the Executive Committee, also in the working group that organized this virtual session, working with the special rules. So this has given me an opportunity to become acquainted with the issues at the IPU. And I see clearly that it is a great organization defined by values, human rights, the rights of parliamentarians, and gender equality, as well as sustainable development. So I'm ready to take on this work enthusiastically, working for the Executive Committee. I hope that in a few months, it may be possible to meet my colleagues in person and not just remotely. So it's a great pleasure. Thank you so much for this election.
Merci beaucoup, cher collègue. I'm looking forward to working with you both on the Executive Committee. I would now suggest that we move on to item 10 of our agenda. Please note that item 9, report of the Committee on the Human Rights of Parliamentarians, will be dealt with tomorrow, Tuesday, 3rd of November. The committee met on 22nd to 31st October, and its draft decisions have been made available to all members and posted on the private password protected webpage for the Governing Council. As a virtual format of this session limits the time that we can dedicate to each agenda item, we have invited any member that has observations, reservations, objections to these draft decisions to send them in writing to the IPU Secretariat by tomorrow, 11 a.m. Central European Time. This will be duly noted for the record. Thank you very much for your kind understanding and cooperation. Now we come on to the agenda item number 10. The Governing Council will be briefed on the outcome of the virtual segment of the 13th Summit of Women Speakers of a Parliament and the 5th World Conference of Speakers of a Parliament, organized in August by the IPU in close cooperation with the United Nations and Austrian Parliament. As a member of the PRECOM, let me just say that we all worked very hard under the difficult circumstances resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic to make these important events as meaningful and impactful as possible. I think we all can be proud of what we have been able to achieve together. Both meetings had a rich agenda. The 5th Speakers Conference was attended by over 115 Speakers of Parliament and remarkable public figures. It concluded with a strong declaration on parliamentary leadership for effective multilateralism that delivers peace and a sustainable development for people and the planet. The full report has been circulated and posted on the website. All speakers will be receiving the publication shortly. If you haven't had the chance yet, I will kindly invite you to also view the video highlights of the conference, also available on the IPU webpage. Now I would like to invite Ms. Andrea Ada Gischaller, President of the Federal Council of Austria, to provide us with an overview of the 13th Summit of Women Speakers of a Parliament. The floor is yours, Madam President, please.
Hello? Hello?
Yes, we can hear you, Madam Speaker.
Oh, thank you very much.
Can you activate your video?
Oh, yes, of course. I do that, yeah. Thank you very much. Okay, now
can see
you can
here.
See me. Good afternoon from Austria, especially from Salzburg. And thank you very much for the nice greetings. Yes. Dear Mr. Acting President, dear Mr. Secretary General, distinguished colleagues, I am very pleased to present to you the results of the 13th Summit of Women Speakers of Parliament, which was, as you already told, organized virtually by you, by the IPU and the Parliament of the Republic of Austria on the 17th and 18th August 2020. We were very sad that we couldn't be with you, and we couldn't, we just had to meet virtually. The summit brought together 24 women speakers from 26 countries under the theme Women's Parliamentary Leadership in the Time of COVID-19 and Recovery. This year's summit came out at a very special time. Not only are we facing an unprecedented global crisis, we are also marking the 25th anniversary of the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action, which is the most ambitious global blueprint for gender equality. The summit was a cruel and very timely stock-taking exercise. It also served to renew commitment towards fulfilling the goals of Beijing. Despite being held virtually, the summit allowed for genuine exchange among women leaders about the persisting and new challenges that lie ahead in the road towards gender equality, as well as the strategies we are implementing to address them. And today, we need women's leadership more than ever. Colleagues, we women speakers stress that the crises are never gender neutral. And the current COVID-19 pandemic is no different. Women have been on the front line of the COVID-19 health response. They have suffered the most from the social and economic consequences of COVID. They have been the first ones to lose their incomes and faced unprecedented levels of gender-based violence. And yet, women's voices remain the exception rather than the norm. In response to this, we women speakers called for putting women's empowerment and gender equality at the center of crisis response and recovery plans. But the question is how to do that. First, we echoed IPU's call for gender parity in decision-making positions. We need 50-50, no less. But we are only halfway to this goal, as women only make up 25% of the world's parliamentarians and only 20% of speakers. And now is the time to speed up action. Second, for us women speakers, building back better starts with good laws. We cannot accept having 2.5 billion women and girls that still face discrimination in the laws of their own countries as if they were half citizens. So we need to accelerate action to eliminate professions that discriminate against women and girls in our countries, whether such discriminations are intended or unintended. We must pass comprehensive legislation that guarantees gender equality. And very importantly, as parliamentarians, we must oversee full implementations of these laws and promote gender response budgeting. Colleagues, while legislation for gender equality is important in a wide range of areas, we women speakers agreed to place particular focus on addressing the unequal share of unpaid care work, eliminating gender gaps in social protection, and ensure equal pay for work of equal volume. This is not only the right thing to do, but also the smart thing to do. We know that when women are economically empowered, their families, communities, and countries also thrive. Finally, we expressed our alarm on the high prevalence of violence against women, including within our own parliamentary institutions. Every one of us must play our part. We, as leaders, and all of you colleagues, are urged to condemn and sanction any acts of sexism, harassment, intimidation, and violence against women in our respective parliaments, including online and in social media. Let us be clear. No country, no institution is immune from sexism and gender-based violence. So let's start by carrying out surveys to reveal the prevalence of such acts and set up a roadmap to prevent and address them. The IPU guidelines are a key tool that we women speakers encourage us all to use so we can lead by example and ensure that the new normal is a good normal. At the closing of our session, we discussed preparations for our next summit and agreed that the preparation committee should be established for that purpose. Such committee can be a structure within the preparatory committee at the World Conference of Speakers of Parliaments. It should of course be made of women speakers, members of the preparatory committee. To conclude, colleagues, I encourage you all to bring home the conclusions of our summit and to fulfill integrate gender equality in the important work you are doing to protect the rights and dignity of your world in these most difficult times. I thank you, but I must a few words in order to prepare the next summit. Ladies and gentlemen, the distinguished delegates, having concluded now my report to the 13th Summit of Women Speakers of Parliament, please allow me to add just a few words on the preparation for 2021. As you are all well aware, the second and physical part of the 5th World Conference of Speakers of Parliaments is planned to take place in summer 2021, given that the COVID-19 situation allows for a meeting, we hope so, of that size. On the political level, a preparation committee is tasked with the preparation of that conference, as co-host Austria is actively taking part in the deliberation in that format and will do everything possible to make the physical meeting happening. We want to see you in Vienna and show you all the nice places we have for you. We are very much looking forward to that important level. Let's hope for the best. And at the very last, I wish you all a good time and please stay healthy. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam President, for your report. At this point, we are supposed to hear the report by Speaker Madanda. Speaker Madanda is a teller of the presidential election. He is now in the meeting with another teller, independent auditor, and the representatives of the candidates. So let's first move on to the nomination to the PrecCom of the Speaker's Conference to be held in Vienna. My colleagues, as Madam President from Austria pointed out, that the Austrian Parliament invited the Speaker's Conference to be held in Vienna next year. Executive Committee decided to recommend to the Governing Council for adoption. So the Speaker's Conference also listed in the future meetings of IPU, we very much look forward at the same time to making our parliamentary voice heard directly and louder through the in-person conference in Vienna next year. In order to prepare for the in-person conference, the Preparatory Committee at its last meeting on 14th October underscored the need to fill the vacancies on the committee. This is the view of the many changes that have occurred since the committee was first established in October 2018. The Preparatory Committee, you will recall, is based on the nominations of geopolitical groups with a strict observance of the gender parity. The list of vacancies is reflected in the document CL/206/10-P.1 has been shared with the chairs of the geopolitical groups. And I understand that the geopolitical groups made the nominations. And now may I invite the Secretary General to inform us of the nominations received from geopolitical groups. Secretary General, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. We have for the Africa group that is entitled to 5 seats on the preparatory committee. We have one vacancy and we have received the nomination of the Speaker of the National Assembly of Malawi, Mrs. Catherine Gotani Hara, to fill that vacancy. For the Arab group, we have received the candidature of Ms. Fauzia Zenaya, Speaker of the Council of Representatives of Bahrain, to fill in the vacancy that needed to be filled by a female speaker. So that is in order. For Asia Pacific, we have received the candidature of Ms. Puan Maharani, Speaker of the House of Representatives of Indonesia, and we are lacking one woman speaker to fill in the additional slot so that the Asia Pacific can have a full slate of 4 representatives. For Eurasia, there is one vacancy to be filled by a male speaker, and we are yet to receive any nomination from the Eurasia group for that seat. And so we are encouraging the coordinator of the geopolitical group to do the needful so that we can have a nomination from that group. For the Latin America and Caribbean group, we do have the candidatures of Ms. Beatriz Azimón, Vice President of the Republic, President of the General Assembly, and Senate of Uruguay, whom you have just elected to the Executive Committee, and Mr. Manzoor Nadir, Speaker of the National Assembly of Guyana. So we have 2 nominations for 2 vacancies. That is fine for the 12 plus. We have received the candidatures of Mr. Wolfgang Schlobel, Speaker of the German Bundestag, with Mr. Steingrimur Sigfundsson, Speaker of the Icelandic Parliament, and Ms. Tern Willemsen Truen, Speaker of the Norwegian Parliament. We are lacking one nomination to complete the full slate for the 12 plus. Mr. President, those are the nominations that have been received so far. I am asked to also report that the women speakers on this preparatory committee will also be responsible for preparing the in-person summit of women speakers taking place at the same time as the World Conference of Speakers. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Secretary General. May I take it that we can endorse these nominations for the Preparatory Committee of the in-person Fifth World Conference of Speakers of Parliament. So endorsed. Thank you very much. I also invite the Asia-Pacific, Euro-Asia, and 12-plus groups to fill the last remaining vacancies as soon as possible. Based on the set reason, and I would, may I wish agreement from the floor, I would like to ask the Secretary General to present at this juncture the brief report on the IPU work during the pandemic. Secretary General, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, distinguished members of the Governing Council. A few days ago, we did circulate a document to the membership of the organization, not with a view to discussion at this particular seating of the Council, but as a means of informing you on what the organization has been up to in the period of the pandemic. The Executive Committee has been regularly informed of the activities of the IPU during the pandemic, and that document that has been circulated to you reflects updates on where what things we have been doing in the implementation of the IPU strategy. You will see from the document that the organization has not been sleeping, has not been in a slumber. It has been active and has responded flexibly and in a resilient manner to the pandemic. Its member parliaments have also been very active in adapting and accommodating the new exigencies and constraints of pandemic. We are therefore happy to report that the organization has not been left in abeyance during the past 8 months since the onset of the crisis. And this is reflected in the document that has been circulated to you. In the early days of the pandemic, Mr. President, what we did was to immediately launch a campaign called Parliaments in Time of Pandemic, in order to begin to see how parliaments were responding to the crisis and to provide data on this response, to devise ways in which parliaments could share their experiences in order to adopt a common coordinated approach to the campaign. I must report that this campaign has been very successful, especially with parliaments, but also in the media. During the early days of the pandemic, too, we sought to adapt our working method in the Secretariat to allow us to work more conveniently and more efficiently online. So we had to invest in new equipment, as I reported in the financial situation that I presented earlier today. The importance was to demonstrate that the IPU was open for business. Its member parliaments were open for business. So the report that you have before you reflects what has been done. And as we have said, we can conclude that this has been an era of virtual electronic democracy. This has been an era of adaptation by parliaments to a new situation. And we conclude that parliaments and IPU have not done poorly. If I do have time, I just want to mention some of the highlights in here. We did launch that campaign, as I said, and the campaign is very popular with the IPU membership, but also with the media and donors, and a number of resources have been designed by the Secretariat. For instance, we have carried out a compilation of how parliaments are dealing with the crisis in terms of health measures, legislation, government scrutiny, technology, and innovation. We have developed also a practical question and answers tool on how parliaments are putting in place remote working tools and technology for parliaments. We prepared a guidance note on the gender dimension of the response to COVID, a guidance note on the human rights response to the crisis. And then we have also developed a short video displaying good examples of parliamentary response to the COVID. So all of this is out there. It has, as I said, received global attention. And our Center for Innovation in Parliament has continued to facilitate exchanges between parliaments on ways of sharing good practices for adapting to the crisis. We're in the process of finalizing a note on the green approaches to COVID-19. We are doing this with the UN Environment Program, and we'll share this in due course. In terms of business continuity, as I said, we did invest in new equipment, and we are pursuing our work, normal work, in implementation of the IPU strategy. We have serviced the speakers' conference that took place in August this year, together with the preparatory work of that summit. You will see that we did organize several meetings of the preparatory committee that was set up to prepare for the conference, as has been explained to you. We did provide for the drafting committee that was set up to prepare the declaration. The Secretariat also had to keep the executive committee busy. We have had five virtual sessions of the executive committee to cater to urgent business pertaining to the work of the organization, including three meetings of the working group, Mr. President, you and our colleagues set up to prepare for the session that is taking place today. And the fact that we're actually holding this session bears testimony to the very serious work that was done by the working group. Other bodies of the organization have also been active. We have the High-Level Advisory Group on Countering Terrorism and Violent Extremism that met in June to review activities conducted in the context of our program in this area, looking at the tools that have been developed and also monitoring the budget. We had, in cooperation with the UN Office on Drug and Crime and the UN Office on Countering Terrorism, we organized a webinar on victims of terrorism to strengthen capacity in parliaments to assess this, to deal with this through legislation. Mr. President, earlier in this session, you mentioned the work of the Committee on Human Rights of Parliamentarians that met this past week, but it also met in May to examine human rights cases before it. As you know, in many cases, it's a question of life and death for human beings. And so we're very keen for the committee to remain active and review these cases, take decisions and make recommendations with a view to resolution of the cases. So you'll be receiving the findings of that committee. We had the committee to promote respect for international humanitarian law that also met to look at the impact of COVID-19 on refugees, stateless men and women, and on the provision of humanitarian assistance. Mr. President, we have the Committee on Middle East Questions. You know, a lot of developments have happened in the Middle East in recent months, and the committee did meet in July this year to examine developments in the region and make recommendations. particularly with regard to the situation in Palestine and in Libya. A report of the work of that committee is being circulated to the membership. When it comes to specific capacity building for parliaments, we continued our work. In Botswana, we helped organize an induction program for newly elected members of parliament. As I mentioned in my financial report, we continue to work with Djibouti in terms of promoting parliamentary contribution to human rights. In Germany, we did do work, make a presentation on sexism and sexual harassment in parliament to a working group of the German Bundestag. And we also were involved in a host of activities in Myanmar, Mauritania, Tanzania, Tunisia, Ukraine, Uzbekistan, Vanuatu, Zambia, you name it. So we have been very busy. And also, we have been active in terms of our research projects and partnerships that are out there. And you remember our flagship publications, the Global Parliamentary Report and the E-Parliament Report. We have progressed in preparation of the next editions of these two flagship publications. We have also worked on doing a regional study on sexism and sexual harassment in African parliaments, working with the African Parliamentary Union. We recently published a document, a note on parliamentary administration and their support to parliamentary institutions around the world. We are also pursuing preparatory work on preparing for the next report on youth representation in Parliament, which is proving to be very popular. Mr. President, I don't want to really bother you with all of these details because you do have this document available to you for reference purposes. We just wanted, in the interest of transparency, to let you know what we have been up to during this pandemic, and I hope that we've been able to demonstrate that we have kept you, the members, busy during this period. We have done our best to help the membership to implement its vision and mission. The document includes an exhaustive list of the specific events and meetings that we have organized and activities that have been organized. The Secretary General himself has been very busy. I believe that I've been busier than before because we're receiving invitations on a daily basis to participate in a host of activities that are now being carried out online. And I'm pleased to say that I've been able to contribute to this without any additional burden on the budget of the organization. Indeed, we have made savings on account of the fact that I don't have to travel for these events and that I can sit in my office and do exactly what is required of me. So, Mr. President, I thought we should use this intervening period before we get Mr. Modenda on the line for his report to give you this briefing on our recent activities. Of course, we stand ready at this session or later on to respond to any questions that you and your colleagues may have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Secretary General, and for the comprehensive report and this great detail. And you are right, Secretary General, working very hard, and you have kept us, the members of Executive Committee, working hard. And we did real and extra hours and extra meetings, but it's worthwhile because we're considering what we are doing is for the benefits of the people. And this is what all about, the IP is all about. Before Speaker Modenda joins us online to deliver the report on the Speaker's Conference, may I move to the item 11, the future parliamentary meetings, because this item is supposed to be taken tomorrow. But I think it is irrelevant to the items that we are discussing and deliberating. So I think with your permission, we move this item today. So we discuss the future inter-parliamentary meetings. Under this item, the Governing Council is invited to review and approve the list of future inter-parliamentary meetings scheduled from the end of 2020 onwards. And I would like to give the floor to the Secretary General to provide an overview of the list of meetings foreseen for the incoming period, particularly as Madam President from Austria mentioned that we are going to have an in-person speakers conference in Vienna, and that will be very, very important conference, as important as the virtual segment. But whatever we discuss online by no means can replace or substitute the in-person meetings between the speakers of our parliaments, particularly when we engage in the bilateral meetings, multilateral meetings, parliamentary diplomacy on that, you know, the premise on that, the speaker's conference. This is very important. So I'd like to give the floor to Mr. Secretary General to brief us and provide an overview of the list of meetings to be held from the end of the 2020 onwards. Mr. Secretary General, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I have been informed that the president of the Turkish IPU group, Dr. Ravza, has raised her green hand. You may want to call on her before I can proceed with the agenda item. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, but my screen, I haven't seen any green hand. So is there anything, you know, in between that might happen? So certainly I'll be lovely to give floor to our member from Turkey. Floor is yours, please.
Okay, Mr. President, we have lost Turkey, but we hope that she can make her comments on the events chat. And I have been told that Speaker Mudenda is now online, and I believe he is ready to present his report on the speakers' conference. You may wish, therefore, to give him the floor if you so desire, Mr. President.
Sure. Thank you very much, Secretary General. I also noticed from event chat, our speaker say hello to us. So, Mr. Speaker, I would like to give floor to you to brief us an overview of the speaker's conference. Floor is yours, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, are you there?
Mr. President, I have been told by the technicians that Speaker Mudenda would need to restart, refresh his line. The technician is coming in. Turkey, can you refresh Mr. Mudenda's line? Yeah, how does he do that? Okay, there is at the top of the screen a two arrows turning, and Speaker Mudenda just needs to click on those two arrows to restart his line. Meanwhile, let's try, Mr. President, the Dr. Ravza from Turkey, who says that she's online now.
Okay. If that's the case, and also I see the green hand. So, Dr. Khan, are you there, right? So I give the floor to you. The floor is yours.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, finally.
Yes, we can hear you.
It's very nice to see all of you again on the second day of the Governing Council. I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you. Thank the IPU President and IPU Secretariat for the webinars that were very, very effective and very fruitful during the pandemic. So I had the opportunity to attend a number of webinars during a time where we had restrictions on going out and we had curfew in Turkey. So it gave us an opportunity to connect and to get information about what's going on with the other world parliaments and other parts of the world. So I find it very, very valuable. Of course, in this governing council, due to the pandemic, we're missing the most fruitful part of parliamentary diplomacy, which is seeing each other, physically being with each other, looking face to face, having coffee or tea together and discussing our issues. So we're missing out on that. But during that time, the webinars organized by the IPU on different topics varying from the economic effects of the pandemic to the different challenges we had all over the world and how each nation was dealing with the pandemic, I think is very, very valuable. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank the IPU, the outgoing IPU President, Madame Gabriela Cuevas Barón, and to the Secretariat and to all the organizers. Thank you. I'm looking forward to our next meeting in person.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ravza. Thank you very much. So I would like to give floor to Speaker Madanda. Speaker Madanda, are you online now?
Can you hear me now, Mr. President?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I hear you loudly. Yes. So the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you. Mr. President and members of the Governing Council, I thank you for giving me the rare opportunity to present a brief report on the outcome of the virtual segment of the 5th Conference of Speakers of Parliament. The virtual segment of the 5th World Conference of Speakers of Parliament, which, as you are aware, took place on the 19th and 20th August 2020, was held under the overall theme of, and I quote, parliamentary leadership for more effective multilateralism that delivers peace and sustainable development for the people and the planet, unquote. It is the unprecedented consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic that made such a high-level event palpably unique. The pandemic impacted on our ability to interact freely and directly among ourselves, as well as to build bridges of dialogue and understanding. However, the current COVID-19 pandemic situation has also compelled us to explore innovative opportunities presented by the use of virtual technologies. In that regard, I congratulate the IPU members and the Secretary General for successfully navigating through the challenges of the virtual world by ensuring that the Speakers' Conference became an actualized event under the dynamic leadership of the former IPU President, Madame Gabrielle Barón. It was an honor for me to have been part of
the preparatory committee charged with putting together the program and documentation of the speaker's conference, as well as leading the deliberations of the drafting committee on the outcome of the declaration. We met multiple times in the lead up to the conference in the spirit of openness, inclusiveness, and collegiality. One can register a sense of extreme satisfaction after a consummated conference. We must look forward towards completing the cycle in anticipation of the in-person conference in Vienna next year, to be staged under the auspices of the Austrian Parliament. In that context, the conference affirmed the need to generate a strong message of parliamentary leadership and solidarity, as well as we learn from the lessons of today and join forces to tackle the daunting challenges facing our world at so many levels, not least in terms of global health, environmental and economic vicissitudes predicated on the unprecedented impact of COVID-19 pandemic. That is why over 115 of the world's top legislators assiduously took part in the virtual conference. Speakers and distinguished experts made their voices heard and contributed on topics spanning effective multilateralism, robust parliamentary diplomacy, climate change, sustainable development, health, youth and gender, democracy, human mobility, countering terrorism, as well as science and technology. Through an interactive debate process of 5 panel discussions and 5 reports, the conference provided a conducive framework for expertise and parliamentary deliberations that converged into an outcome attesting to effective multilateralism that delivers peace and sustainable development for the planet. Equally significant was the notable guidance of the former IPU president, Madame Baron, the president of the National Council of Austria, and contributions from the United Nations Secretary General and the president of the United Nations General Assembly. Above all, the virtual segment of the 5th World Conference of Speakers culminated in the adoption by consensus of a robust declaration which provides a roadmap for our proceeding work. As noted by Madame Baron, the former IPU president, in her closing remarks, it was now up to each one of us and our national parliaments to take up the mantle of leadership and build on what we have achieved together, paying attention to the critical role of parliaments in policy making, law making, fulfilling their budget and oversight responsibilities without compromising democracy, the rule of law, and the observance of human rights. We have also pledged to reinforce the role of parliaments in global governance, underpinned by an enhanced multilateralism and international solidarity anchored on the equality of sovereign nations. Mr. President, the conference was also a seminal platform in deepening our ties with the United Nations and the IPU's other partners. In consonance with our theme of more effective multilateralism. Our declaration has been formally presented at the United Nations General Assembly and circulated among all the UN member states for their informative perusal. I would like to commend the Secretariat under the sterling leadership of the Secretary General for producing the report of the Speaker's Conference. May I take this opportunity to invite all parliamentarians around the world to study the conference publication and reflect on the key outcome messages which should spur us towards working together for a better world. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I also take this opportunity to commend you, Ms. Speaker, your outstanding contribution to the success of the fifth Speaker's Conference, particularly in the drafting committee, preparatory committee, and also Speaker's Conference itself. So thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Now I see a green hand, and I'd like to give the floor to a representative from China, Mr. Dong. The floor is yours.
Mr. President, Mr. Secretary General, dear colleagues, good evening. With the joint efforts of all parliaments and the IPU Secretariat, the virtual session of the Fifth World Conference of Speakers of Parliament was held successfully at August. The declaration adopted reflected the important consensus of all parliaments, called for unity and cooperation, and spoke out the voice of joining hands in fighting COVID-19 and tackling the difficulty. The COVID-19 outbreak indicates once again that all countries are closely connected and we share a common future. All legislatures should take this opportunity to implement the declaration and other outcomes of the conference. We are firm in our resolve to uphold multilateralism, support the UN and the WHO in playing their roles. People of different countries shall come together, jointly defeat the virus, promote the economic recovery, and build a community with a shared future for mankind. The IPU Secretariat should implement important consensus reached in the declaration throughout the work of the IPU and play its dual role in building up the consensus and enhancing solidarity and cooperation among all parliaments. Thank you all and stay healthy.
Thank you very much for the comment. As we are waiting for the results of the election, the final election, and I think we will keep the agenda as it is. So the future meetings, this item will be dealt with tomorrow. So we are ready to announce the results. So we return to the agenda items number 5, the election of the president of IPU. At this point, in the extraordinary virtual session of the Governing Council, we are about to announce the result of the first round of the election of the IPU president. As you will recall, the first 24-hour remote voting window opened yesterday, 1st November, after 1500 Central European times, and it closed earlier today at 1500 CET. May I remind you that the quorum is 162 votes, as announced at the beginning of this Governing Council session. The independent auditor and the tellers have verified the voting process and the outcome in the presence of the representatives of the candidates. I would like to invite first the independent auditor to provide his report on the technical aspects of the election. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Acting President. So I will present the results of the findings from my side. So as everyone knows, I was appointed to verify the four pillars identified by IPU Secretariat: the secrecy of the ballot, the security of the voting platform, the voter identification and the authentication, and the overall oversight of the process. So I, based on the analysis that I've carried out, I can confirm that there's a reasonable assurance that those four principal pillars we are expecting for the election of the IPU presidents. There were only just a couple of, I mean, some deviations in telephone number registrations. So the telephone numbers do not, only a few of them do not correspond to the ones registered, provided during the registration process. Some of them have been identified as a typo. Some of them are related to different phone numbers. But I guess this is due to the fact that the voters has multiple telephone numbers, and I used a different number for registration. But overall, I think that the four pillars were met. Thank you.
Thank you very much. May I invite now the Secretary General to read out the results of the first round election. Secretary General, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. It gives me pleasure to announce the results of the first round of voting for the IPU president. As you have recalled, Mr. President, the quorum set for the deliberations of this governing council was 162. The number of votes cast during the electoral process was 394 out of a total of 406. This represents 97% of the registered voters. The absolute majority required to be elected a president of the IPU was therefore 198. The results of the voting process that started yesterday at 3 p.m. Geneva time and concluded at 3 p.m. today Geneva time, the results are as follows in the order in which the candidates presented their candidatures. Mr. Mohamed Sadiq Sanjrani, 52 votes. Mr. Duarte Pacheco, 222 votes. Mr. Akmal Saidov, 67 votes. And Ms. Salma Ataulajan, 53 votes. So our conclusion is that Mr. Duarte Pacheco has obtained the absolute majority required for him to be elected president of the IPU. Mr. President, you have listened to the explanations given by the independent auditor regarding a few minor discrepancies regarding phone numbers. That those discrepancies were judged by the college working on the results, the tellers, the independent auditor, the representatives of the candidates, not to be of such a nature as to alter the final outcome of this process. So I am pleased to announce, therefore, that Mr. Pacheco has obtained the requisite absolute majority to be elected president of the IPU. Over to you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Secretary General. Mr. Pacheco of Portugal has obtained the absolute majority of the votes cast on the online secret ballot. And as such, in accordance with the rule of 35 of the Governing Council, I hereby declare Mr. Pacheco of Portugal is elected to the office of the President of the IPU for the period of 2020 to 2023. Congratulations, Mr. Pacheco. Now I have the honor to invite our new president to make a brief remarks. The formal acceptance speech will be delivered at the opening of the sitting the following day, that's tomorrow. Now, Mr. Pacheco, the floor is yours, sir.
Please, Mr. Pacheco, can you activate your video, please? Okay.
Good. Mr. Pacheco, the floor is yours.
Now that we have the video, okay. Okay.
Mr. President, Mr. Secretary General, thank you so much. It's an honor for me to be elected President of IPU. It will be just a short statement. 19 years ago, on this day, 2nd of November, I was father. And now I am elected. I think this is a special date for me. And I need to say that I was elected because I received the support of so many colleagues from different continents, from different countries in all continents. Thank you so much for your confidence. I hope to be the president of all the organization. I wish to work with all of you. And I will ask the support, of course, of the other candidates. They show they like the IPU so much as I. And we will work together to have a stronger IPU. Because we believe in the parliamentarian diplomacy as a way to achieve solutions to global problems of the world, to fight poverty, to fight climate change, to fight terrorism, to fight intolerance between peoples, religions, and countries. We are in a so small world. We need to work together to have a better future. But please, next Wednesday, I will do another speech, but now I need to say also that it's essential to say thank you to the Portuguese Speaker of the Parliament because he trusts in me and he decided to present my name. The staff of the Portuguese Assembly, well, you are here. You did a great job. Our friends from the Portuguese-speaking countries. Thank you so much. I hope to be a great president to the IPU. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. May on behalf of the Governing Council, and also in my own name, congratulations. We look forward to listen to your acceptance speech tomorrow. So this concludes our today's business.
Mr. President.
Yes, Secretary
sorry,
General.
Before you adjourn this sitting, we have been told that Mr. Sanjrani of Pakistan would like to make a statement. You may wish to give him the floor before you conclude this session today. Thank you.
Sure. Mr. Speaker, I wish to give the floor to you. The floor is yours, Mr. Speaker.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Mr. Dorte Pacheto, newly elected President IPU, Honorable Parliamentarians, Secretary General IPU, ladies and gentlemen. I avail this opportunity to convey my heartfelt felicitation to Mr. Dorte Pacheto, newly elected President of IPU. As I had shared yesterday, no matter I win or lose, I will always be committed and available to cooperate with the newly elected president and all member parliaments to serve to the cause of humanity. Here I would like to congratulate the IPU Secretariat for conducting elections in these unprecedented times and ensuring their round-the-clock assistance to the members. Dear friends, let's work together to seize the opportunity provided to us during this prevailing crisis. We must rise to the occasions and convey to our people that we parliamentarians, as their representatives, will work on an agenda which places welfare of all at its center. I once again congratulate Mr. Dorte Pacheto and wish him all the best in his future endeavors. God bless you all. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, for your kind words and graciousness. I'm just wondering, other candidates, if you so request, I'd be lovely to give floor to you. Mr. Saidov, are you there? Ms. Selma Talogen, are you there? Okay, I will put this way, if tomorrow you are still there and join us in the tomorrow's meeting, if you so request, I will be lovely to give you floor to Mr. Saidov and Ms. Talogen. Secretary General, before I adjourn the meeting, do you have any housekeeping matters?
No, Mr. President, just to remind participants that we'll resume tomorrow, 3rd of November at 2 p.m. Geneva time. 2 p.m. Geneva time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Secretary General. This concludes our today's business. Now the meeting is adjourned.